welcome to Parents' Perspective. I'll probably hate myself for saying this, the seventh grader began, but I think it's good for parents to set limits. The adults in the room nearly fell off their chairs. Was he pulling our collective legs? We looked at the middle schooler sitting in front of us, a panel discussing what kids would like their parents to know, and wondered how each behaved at home. We had raised our own children, cute youngsters who had morphed into tall, handsome specimens who spent much of their teen years trying to negotiate limits different from those we set. We frequently felt like attorneys for the defense, explaining our case, or hanging judges, finally issuing unpopular verdicts. The other middle schoolers squirmed in their seats. They looked down, they looked at the boy who had spoken, and then one by one, they nodded their heads. "Yeah," another boy spoke up. "It's good to know where you stand." "Even if you don't agree," chimed in a girl next to him, "you can at least talk about it." "Maybe you could even change the rules," another girl piped up hopefully. "Yeah," the first boy brightened, "but at least they're there to change." The students all nodded sagely. The adults were ready for smelling salts. From a parent's perspective, how important are limits for our children? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest is a parenting coach involved in Dads Unlimited. Alan Shedlin, Jr. has been a child and family consultant for more than four decades. He has been a teacher, principal, executive director of the National Elementary School Center, and a national and state policy advisor on issues affecting children, families, and schools. He is president and CEO of Dads Unlimited LLC, an organization dedicated to demystifying parenting and developing a comprehensive range of services and resources that support parenting. Building on his extensive work with individual families and children since 1963, he has established a parenting consulting practice. Alan has three grown daughters and four grandchildren. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Alan.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
From the viewpoint of an adult, why are limits important for kids?
The goal of establishing limits is not to control children, but to help children control themselves. And for me, a metaphor that has often worked for parents in terms of why limits are important is to picture what it feels like driving across a bridge. And if our listeners would close their eyes as they picture this, it'll be more vivid for them. Picture driving across a bridge and picture what you would feel like if somebody removed the guardrails. The purpose of limits is to provide boundaries so kids feel comfortable negotiating and crossing their bridges and all the bumps in their roads.
I'm going to worry about going on bridges from now on.
Right.
Oh, a lot of us do.
What's the biggest challenge, do you think, for parents when they face setting limits for kids?
It's really hard to come up with one challenge because I think we live in a culture and a society where there are an awful lot of challenges to setting limits. One challenge is that we live in a culture and a society that encourages defying limits. Look at our advertisements, look at the media. We romanticize, we advertise cars, we advertise SUVs that go off-road and defy limits. And then we also publicize the heroes in our culture, usually sports stars, pop folks, government authorities, who break rules as well. So one of the challenges is living in a society which romanticizes challenging limits and breaking limits. Second challenge, as I see it, is that parents do tend to spend less and less time with their children, and they would like those fewer and fewer moments to be happy moments, and they have a confusion that if they abandon limits during those moments, the times will be happier times. A third reason is that there is a natural inclination of children, both in the early years around 2 and 3 and 4 years old, and then again resurfacing during the teenage years, to challenge limits. That, by the way, is a very healthy part of growing up, and we can talk more about that later on, although it doesn't always feel quite as comfortable at the time. And I think another challenge is that we are more stressed, we are more tired, and it's harder to maintain limits. A child said to me at one point, it's hard for Dad to say no when he's really tired. So kids know that, by the way. Consistency is also hard when you're tired.
Consistency means you have to actually remember what you said or did an hour ago or a day ago, right?
That's exactly right.
And the kids, of course, do.
The kids will remember it.
When's the best time for teaching kids rules? And I don't mean the time of day. I mean the time in their lives.
Definitely not dinner time.
Right.
Well, I think it's best to start at the beginning, and there are different ways of conveying rules. It may seem odd to think about it this way, but when you are changing your baby's diaper on a changing table, you're actually probably and should be setting limits in terms of the baby squirming, and you are holding the baby steady to make sure he or she doesn't fall off the changing table. And I would recommend, even though the baby and the infant will not understand the words, but beginning to establish a pattern from the very beginning that there is a reason, there is a rationale for limits, there is a utility to it. And to always have in your own mind the reason. You might say to the infant at the time, I'm holding you firmly on the table while I change your diaper so you don't fall off and hurt yourself. You begin to get accustomed yourself to understanding the whole notion of consequences and to establishing limits. Another really important time to begin with this is during whatever the situation comes up with a child where limits do need to be set. And again, you always give a reason, and in my opinion, you also invite children to ask what the reason is. And very important to me is understanding that children can ask the reason and you need to have a reason, but also understanding that the child doesn't need to agree with your reason.
This is where the phrase, because I'm the dad and I said so, comes in.
Well, I think it's a little bit like that, although it's very interesting. Sandy, you began with that wonderful quote from a middle school child. And actually, I had a similar quote from a child. And by the way, the whole topic of the freedom of limits and setting limits for your child is an outgrowth of interviews that I did, focus groups, 28 focus groups in 3 countries with children as young as 5 and as old as 21, 162 kids in total. And one of the questions I asked was, if you were to have a head-on clash with your parents, what would be the most likely area? And 6 areas came up over and over and over again. The one that came up first in every group was setting and testing limits. And that quote from the middle school child does not surprise me, because all children in the groups that I talk with did ask to have limits set and did recognize the importance. But back to your question about, because I'm the dad and I said so, or because I'm the mom and I said so, is one of the children made a distinction, and this was actually an 8-year-old boy, who said, he needs to set limits for my sake, not for his sake, not for him to show who's boss.
Wow.
And there may be listeners who don't talk a lot with kids, who wonder whether kids are smart enough to make those kind of distinctions and observations. They are.
Yeah, our kids are pretty sharp, and I think we need to give them credit for that when we're working on the rules and the limits.
Mm-hmm. And they also, of course, know which parent to go to if they want less stringent limits.
That's a really good point. I had a 5-year-old say to me, I only let mommy spank me because she spanks softly.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on the freedom of limits.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with parenting coach Alan Shedlin, Jr. about the freedom of limits for kids. What's the best way to introduce specific rules to kids? Are there techniques that you would recommend?
I think that, again, let's go back to the earlier point of establishing a pattern and a habit, that there are limits and there is always a reason for limits. And then I would say seizing upon and taking advantage of situations as they occur with a child. Kodak used to have an advertising campaign of "It's a Kodak Moment." People who teach know that there are specific teaching moments. There are also specific parenting moments, in my opinion. And so when something comes up that provides a good teachable moment, if you will, a good parenting moment, that would be a good time to begin talking about limits.
For example, we had our oldest, when he was about 3 years old or so, decided he was going to cross a parking lot by himself. And so I figured that was a pretty teachable moment, and I grabbed him big time. But it seems to me that in an everyday situation, there must be a lot of them.
There are a lot of them, and sometimes we shy away from them, but I think it's really important to seize them. Another important point, I think, is that we need to understand that most of what kids learn is caught and not taught. And so we need also to be able to model our own behavior as well in terms of limits and be aware that kids are watching us really, really carefully.
Why don't you clarify what you mean by the difference between caught and taught?
Okay, so we frequently think that the way kids learn best is to be able to lecture them and to tell them what to do without being aware that they're actually observing all of our actions really, really carefully. And so kids catch, you know, what we do and are really good at being able to see distinctions between what we say and what we do.
We had a very interesting guy come on. I think he might have been a former police officer. I don't remember, but what he was talking about was teenagers and driving. And he said something that was quite frightening to us at the beginning. He said, well, people who teach driving don't really teach teens how to drive. They already know how to drive. They've been watching you for years.
Yes, no, that's a very, very, very important point.
We frequently told our own kids the reason behind the rule, as you mentioned a little earlier. But doesn't that sometimes set up a debate about whether the reason is a good one or whether it should really lead to the rule in question at all? And what should we remember when we have to say no?
That's a really good question. First of all, I think debates are not necessarily bad. So debates are a real opportunity to clarify limits and to clarify where we stand and to hear where our children stand. So I wouldn't shy away from debate by just by definition. I think we need to consider what the ratio of saying no to saying yes is with our children, mm-hmm. too. So there is nothing wrong with saying no to your child. There is nothing more frightening to a child than to have an adult be around and for the child to feel like they're in control. It's very important for the child to know that the adult is indeed in control. I'm sure we've all done this and heard this. One of the most frequently used words when parents give direction to a child is they say, you need to go to bed now, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Catch yourself. Think about how often you do that. And what that signals to a child is, first of all, this is, I don't know, I call it a go away closer moment where we're giving a rule and yet we're not really sure of the rule and we're not really sure ourselves. So what if the child says no? It's not okay. So don't be tentative when you talk about what the home rules are. And I think it is important, and Sandy, you brought this up earlier with the difference between going to mommy and going to daddy if it's a two-parent family or two parents living in the home, is to describe the rules as family rules rather than mommy's rules or daddy's rules. And there is a point where it's very helpful to involve the kids in what the procedures are and what the processes are. So it's really is a family rule, not mommy's rule or daddy's rule.
Does that mean that you are advocating like a little family powwow about rules or that kind of thing? Or?
Well, I think it's, it would be a really great idea for mom and dad to have their own powwow first in the families where mom and dad are present. In some ways it's easier when there is only one parent present. In some ways it's a lot harder when there's only one parent present. But I think it's good to be clear first between the parenting partners what their opinions are first and where they stand. And I, by the way, would advocate doing that before the baby is born. And actually, I would advocate doing that even before parents hook up with each other, if you will, because having those kind of discussions early on is really helpful in terms of knowing what your belief system is.
Except what would you ask each other if you don't even have the baby?
And well,
we're not talking about curfews, right?
No, you might be talking about curfews. You might be talking about how important do you think it is, for instance, for a child to be polite. You know, when our child is able to talk and answer the telephone, how would you like that to be done? How do you feel about curfews? How do you feel about whatever the particular issues are in a particular family? I was talking the other day with a family where there was some issue about getting dressed or undressed in front of a child, and one parent felt very strongly that the youngster should never see the parent of the opposite sex naked beforehand, and the other parent didn't feel strongly about it at all. And so those are the kind of issues that I think can come up beforehand and maybe are helpful discussions to have in terms of clarifying what your belief system is.
Let's talk for a minute about consequences. First, if we tell our kids in advance about a consequence, doesn't that send the message that we expect them to break the rule? By the way, just in case you break the rule, I have it all figured out what's going to happen to you. What about the difference between that and punishments?
That also is a really, really good question and a very, very important distinction, I think, to make is for us to be thinking about consequences as opposed to punishments. Here are the reasons that I think that's an important distinction to make. If one thinks of a punishment, it enables a child, allows a child to think that this is something that the parent has done to them as a result of their behavior, as opposed to a consequence, which makes it really, really clear that whatever the consequence is, it has to do with the child's behavior. One child said to me, I wish my parents would coordinate their moods so that they're not both angry at me at the same time, without a sense that the moods sometimes are dependent upon the child's behavior and as a consequence. Another important distinction between consequence and punishment is if you were thinking about a consequence construct, you are also allowing for there to be positive consequences. And I think that that's a very, very important distinction. Again, earlier we talked about, you know, if you say no and setting up rules and the rationale for rules, about the whole notion of debate with your child. And again, I see this as an opportunity to have those kind of discussions.
You just have to be sure not to have them when the phone's ringing, the dinner is burning, and somebody needs help with homework.
That's exactly right. It's also important, I think, as your child gets older, and I'm sure we're going to get to some discussion about the teenage years, which are normal and natural times for there to be challenges to family rules, to have children involved in helping figure out what the consequence is.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on the freedom of limits.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $10 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with parenting coach Alan Shedlin, Jr. about the freedom of limits for kids. What kinds of guidelines do you think work best for limit setting for teenagers?
I think when you have teenagers, one might be helpful to go into what I consider a triage mindset, which is to think about for yourselves, what are the issues that I really think are important to go to the mat for with my child. I'll give you an example, a personal example. I have three now adult daughters, and one of them was neatness challenged as a teenager.
That's beautiful, rather than saying you have to fumigate the room.
And earlier in their lives, they were lucky enough, each of my daughters, to have their own room. And we had a rule about how neat the room needed to remain. And the daughter who was neatness challenged during her teenage years, it became much, much less important to me at how neat her room remained, because that was an issue that wasn't worth going to the mat for. And so instead of insisting on a certain level of neatness, the rule changed. And the rule was you need to keep the door to your room shut so that the rest of us aren't exposed to what your room looks like. And there can be nothing alive growing out of your floor. So having a sense of humor about it is important, but also being willing to decide which are the rules that really, really are important to you.
And now, since you had three, did you have the inevitable piping up from one of the other daughters? Now, wait a minute, how come she has a more lenient rule?
No, I didn't have that, because a lot of the neatness didn't have to do with what was our preference, but what their own particular propensities were. So, no, that wasn't an area. Did that happen in other areas? Yes, of course it did.
Yeah. Now, what do you do when you have that situation, which people have when they have multiple kids?
Yes, and there actually is some humorous work done on, you know, the difference between bringing up your first, second, and subsequent children, if there are, in terms of how careful you are about what you do. It's a really, really difficult issue, and I don't have any neat guidelines for that, except to have a discussion about how each one of us are different. Mainly, I do think that the major rules need to remain consistent for all of the kids.
My husband used to say to whoever was squawking about the inequity of the rules or something, he would just look at them and say, well, that's because I love so-and-so more.
Yes, again,
shut everybody up.
Well, again, I think it's really, really important to be able to have a sense of humor about some of these kind of things.
My kids still talk about the Valentines that they all got one year. I have three sons. They all got the same Valentine. You are my favorite child, and I love you very much. Happy Valentine's Day. And they called, of course, they called each other. Did you know Mom sent me this Valentine? It was ideal.
Yeah. I think when one is talking about setting limits with teenagers, it's always good to have a sense of humor, if you can muster it. So what I often tell parents of teenagers is that there is a very important new medical discovery that they should be aware of. And the medical discovery is that the rolling eyes of a teenager when you're talking to them do not disconnect their ears.
Very good.
It's very, very, very important to know that in all kind of focus groups and all kind of research on teenagers, that their parents, despite what they like to convey to you, are incredibly important, the most important influence in their lives. It's also important to remember what a 15-year-old girl told me when I asked if she had some advice for her dad. And her advice was, yes, he should tell me what the rules are, but he should only tell me once. Mm-hmm. I know it doesn't seem like I've listened to him, but I really have, and I heard him the first time.
Well, unfortunately, we have to end our discussion just when it was getting really fun, but we want to leave all our listeners with whatever resources you might suggest when they want to work on these issues a little bit more.
I think that there are three ways that we learn to be the parent that we most want to be and maybe the parent we most wished we had had ourselves. I think that the most important resource you have is yourself. Try to remember what it was like for you when you were the age of the child that you were speaking to. The second resource you have is others. Think about a parent that you know who you think is a particularly good parent. Think about a friend that you have who might be doing things in a way that you envy. The others might also include experts. And then the third resource you have, the one most often neglected, is your child. Look at your child and have an understanding about who your child is, what they like, what frightens them, what doesn't frighten them. So those are the resources.
Alan, The Freedom of Limits, your booklet, how could listeners get a copy of that?
Okay, they can contact me directly at Family Sense Press, and they can either call 301-907-6742. They can contact me via email at ashedlin, S-H-E-D-L-I-N, all one word, at daddying.com, or they can go to the website www.daddying.com, and that's D-A-D-D-Y-I-N-G. And although daddying is highlighted, this is for parents, not just dads.
Well, this whole show has been for parents, not just dads, and any adults who are interested in limit setting for children. So, Alan Shedlin, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for inviting me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of Mr. Shedlin's booklet, The Freedom of Limits. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's very helpful to us. Mention show number 274 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you are tuning into. Alan Shedlin's booklet, The Freedom of Limits, is available at www.daddying.com.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programs. Parents' Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send checks or money orders to Parents' Perspective, Incorporated, Post Office Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. And thank you for helping us to continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.